Digging Deeper Without the Cold Face, the podcast that shares the incredible stories of the talented and passionate people in our industry. This episode of Digging Deeper Without the Cold Face brought to you by Easy Group, your trusted partner in vehicle rentals, mechanical services and sign solutions. Servicing Mackay, Moranbah and Emerald with dedication and excellence. Everything is easy with Easy Group. And your host, Jessica Rouse.
Valley Operations, which has certainly been playing the long game when it comes to an extension of their operations out here. It's a joint venture between Yancoal and Glencore. And ultimately out here, the guys are looking to extend operations until 2045. We're catching up with General Manager Dave Foster on this episode of Digging It Deeper with At The Coalface. Dave, thanks for joining us.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me, Jess.
And thanks for having us out at site.
That's a change, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. The magic of being able to carry all of the gear in a couple of backpacks, I guess.
That's a pretty fancy setup you got for a portable unit, that's for sure.
Only the best for you, Dave, obviously. Now, I want to talk about your mining career first, because you've basically come full circle when it comes to Hunter Valley Operations. Take us back to school. Let's go right back.
Yeah, sure. Look, I pinch myself quite regularly that I've managed to get to the role I am in the mine industry without it ever having to leave home, actually. So I grew up in Singleton, not born in Singleton, but grew up in Singleton and certainly called Singleton my home since the early 80s. So Singleton High School and then off to Newcastle University, where I studied civil engineering. So I studied there for a number of years, worked back in Singleton, drove down every day. And then, you know, after a number of years, end up in the mine industry as all my friends, my family, it was probably destined to happen at some stage. Yeah.
Yeah. I was saying before, it sounds like civil engineering is quite boring. Everyone seems to end up in mining.
Oh, it's not. It's quite an interesting topic. I think I was more destined to be in mining at some stage. You know, when you were growing up in Singleton, you know, everyone knew what a D11 dozer was and trucks. It was certainly a thing. Mining always interested me, but I just didn't like the big smoke of heading to Sydney to study mining engineering. So I knew we'd end up back in the industry at some stage.
Yeah, yeah. So Tell me about your first job out here at HVO.
Yeah, sure. So 2005, I think September 2005, started as what's called the operations engineer out here. And, I looked after all the water management, all the road network as a civil engineer, working for the actual mining production team, which was quite an unusual role. There's not probably too many mine sites had a role like that for a civil engineer, particularly involved with the actual production side of it, and that had allowed me to really get a decent knowledge of mining itself, sort of progressed in the pathway through as production superintendent, and eventually studied for my mine manager's certificate of competency, all those sort of things to get me where I am today.
Yeah, and obviously, 20 years ago, the mine out here would have looked completely different, I imagine.
Funnily enough, it doesn't look too much different
to what
it does. it's quite interesting. The mine, we do move a lot of material every year. I was only just joking to a friend last week that used to work over in Howick, the old West Pit area of the mine, and it still looks exactly like it did 20 years ago. It's just moved a couple of kilometres along. It's changed a little bit now because we've changed the method of mining in that area, but when I first started here 2 years ago, it was even all the ramps were all called exactly the same thing. Okay. It was quite unusual. Yeah.
So when you finished up here, how long were you here the first time around?
Yeah, so 5 years in total. So I started as an engineer and then I left as a production superintendent, so with my mine manager's ticket.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot of opportunities. It was Rio Tinto owned the mine back then. So I sort of wanted to continue my advancement career, and the only way to do that at that stage was either to leave the valley with Rio Tinto, to get to the WA or somewhere like that, or there was plenty of opportunities with Xstrata back then, which is now Glencore, obviously, but took an opportunity over at Liddell as the mine manager.
Yeah, there you go. And what ended up bringing you back to HVO?
it was something. Well, I don't know. I always set probably a bit of a goal for myself. It'd be nice to come back to HVO one day. HVO was it was home to me. It was my first job in the industry, and that, you know, the people that were here, there was it was just a great place to work with a lot of really good people and a great resource to be able to continue to develop with, you know, certainly a long mine life. So probably saw it, you know, probably later on in my career with Glencore, probably, you know, saw it as an opportunity one day to come back and actually run HVO. And that's, you know, I was lucky enough to be able to get chosen to do that nearly 2 years ago now.
Yeah, how cool. 20 years ago, you wouldn't have thought you'd be running the place.
No, that's... I used to walk past my office with, you know, a bit of a shudder saying, hopefully I never have to go in there back 20 years ago. And it's amazing the different feel you get. Hopefully I don't have that impact on other people there now. I certainly don't want to feel like that.
No, surely not. Now, obviously, we've got listeners all over the place. So HVO is obviously quite a big mine. Give us a bit of a rundown on what you've got out here.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, look, HVO is a big mine. Look, it's historically three separate operations that formed to become HVO back in around 2000, that was. So, it is large. I think it's around 15 kilometres from north to south.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of area to cover. You know, certainly a lot of material we move every year. We move around what we call 130 million bank cubic metres of material, both coal and waste material, to produce the coal that we do. So we're working towards mining around 21 million ROM tonnes of coal every year.
Yeah. And where is your coal predominantly going?
Yeah, that market's it's shifted. The market is quite dynamic. It's still very strong, but, you know, predominantly we've historically been our market's been Japan. That has shifted a little bit there now. So, China's certainly taking a fair portion of the coal, but there's a lot of new emerging markets coming still in Southeast Asia, but, the newer players into Southeast Asia as well as taking up that load that Japan's, not as strong in demand as what it used to be.
So HVO has been in the news quite a bit over the last few years with proposals going forward to extend operations here. Take us through what's been going on there.
Yeah, sure. Look, we have been in the thick of it, trying to get our approval through the planning process. So what we're trying to do is to extend the life of HVO at currently approved rates. So we were firstly looking to seek approval out to 2050. So that was our original plan that was put forward back in 2019. And look, it's amazing how the goalposts have shifted over that time. And obviously with, you know, negotiations and discussions through the government and the community, mid last year there were significant concerns with the emissions of our proposal. And while our proposal was I think it was a really good proposal, the fact that we're mining back through all of our old workings, so 90% of our approval or our mining area in the future is back through previously mined out areas. So things like disturbing new ground and ecologies, mining closer to communities, it wasn't part really a massive part of the HVO project. Hence why it made so much sense to go ahead with that project. But the one thing that was a concern to the community, obviously, and the government was our emissions, and we were mining back through an area in the early 40s where it was slightly higher gas volume. And that was, mid last year, we were asked by the government to see what mining looks like without mining through that area, and that meant taking 5 years off the back end of the life of the project. Around sort of August, September last year, we agreed to do that, which that was one of the reasons that we had to go back and seek an extension to our current approval as our North consent expired in June.
Yeah,
and these extra work we had to do to stop mining in 2045 meant around 80% of our environmental impact statement or EIS, all the studies, 80% of the studies involved building that document had to be all be redone. So another 18 months worth of work and significant investment to do. But certainly the good thing out of it is that new proposal we've now We're still going through that study. We hope to submit that in the coming months. But that new project is a significant reduction in emissions. Post 2040, I think the reduction's around 90% less emissions than what the original project was going to have, certainly making the project a lot more a balanced or certainly approvable within the state government and the community's eyes. Mm.
And you mentioned the goalposts always feeling like they were moving. You certainly haven't been backwards in coming forward about that either.
No, I haven't. And that's the concern for us. Like I said, we started this process in 2019. All the other considerations that we normally take into mining in the past around groundwater and surface water, your local community, cultural heritage, all those sort of things were certainly considered well, and there was a significant amount of changes that we've made to our project over that period involving those things. And while greenhouse gas emissions was considered back in 2019, it certainly wasn't as big an issue as it is today. Hence, the goalposts have moved significantly, and that's the real concern for us in certainly in the mining industry is how we manage that transition and the goalposts constantly shifting. It's a significant investment for our business and time to get any mine approved these days, and it's a consideration that most mining companies have to make on whether we want to continue mining certainly in New South Wales.
Yeah, exactly. I imagine there would have been a few nervous people on site the closer we got to June, certainly, with that lease expiring for the north part of the site.
Yeah, certainly there was a fair bit of concern with a number of people in the workforce, but we managed to get that extension approved just in time to be able to continue without being able to stop.
Exactly. And I guess the other hard part is there's how many people employed out here relying on this job?
Yeah, look, there's around 1,500 people. That's employees, contractors, and so forth. But that's only the small part of it for me. I think it's you can multiply that times over and over again within the communities. The people that run the local cafes and so forth is significantly more than the 1,500 people that we've got. We like to call ourselves one of the economic anchors for certainly the Upper Hunter. Without HVO going forward, there'll be a massive hit on the Upper Hunter community.
Exactly. And you mentioned that Hunter Valley Operations is obviously quite an important part of the Singleton community, particularly economic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we certainly consider ourselves part of the lifeblood of the Hunter community, particularly the Upper Hunter region. We employ 1,500 people, and it's not just the 1,500 people; it's the communities that multiply that times and time again. Yeah, we spend more than $1 billion every year with more than 800 businesses as well. So
it's massive.
Many of them are within our local community too. So our workforce, we pay around $224 million. That was last year. Certainly all those things flow directly into the local economy. And last year we paid $276 million in local, state and federal government taxes and royalties. So significant contribution to not just the Hunter, but the New South Wales and the Australian economy. And that's obviously one of the key reasons why we believe the overall project needs to be approved.
And that also drives home just how important the coal mining industry as a whole, in New South Wales is so important. Those royalties to the government, what is put into the local community. Without that, take that away, that's a huge gap.
Yeah, it is huge. Yeah, and New South Wales mining tells us that the coal mining industry in Australia is the second largest export, only second to iron ore. So, without that industry, the Australian economy will certainly struggle. Mm.
And on the Upper Hunter, and I guess the coal industry more statewide, more nationally, what do you see for the future of coal mining? Obviously, a big future.
Yeah, look, there is. Number one, we certainly agree with climate change. We also agree that we need to have a good transition to a low carbon future, and that transition. Coal is going to be needed within that transition, probably for the next 20 years, and that's the studies that we've undertaken and the look at the market going forward. There's going to be really strong demand for coal, for at least the next 20 years, and hence why we're really confident that we'll get the project forward, because it's good for the economy, particularly the Upper Hunter economy. Whilst we're mining, you know, the coal that we do have in our resource quite sustainably.
Yeah, definitely. It's quite a good vibe out at site. I was here, oh my goodness, the family day was a couple of weeks ago now, but it was so nice to see all of your employees coming together, and we spoke about it on the day. You know, it was a way for you to thank them, I guess, for the work that they do out here.
Yeah, it was. I think I said to you at the time, you know, running such a big site, we struggle at times with how we can thank our employees. And that family day was just one small way that we can do that, and it was great to see so many smiling faces, particularly on the kids that don't get to see mum and dad's workplace very often.
Yeah, particularly I noticed the kids were very excited to look into the pit. The lookout you have here was amazing.
It is a good view over the West Pit there, and it was nice for those listeners out there just to paint the picture. We had one of our bigger diggers close to the lookout, so it was a good view of it. And every time a bus load turned up, we radioed the excavator, and they swung around and waved the bucket in the air while they're bipping all the horns. So
I thought that's what was happening. It was quite special.
It was quite special for the kids, that's for sure.
That's so cool. Something I was thinking of driving out here, I spoke to a gentleman by the name of, I think his name was Ken, don't quote me on it, but he worked in EMT and Mines Rescue for years and years, and he was telling me this story out here. Again, don't quote me on when it was, 80s or the 90s, but I don't know if you've heard it. Apparently a light plane came and landed here on site, and the Mines Rescue, everyone got involved. It didn't unfortunately end under the best circumstances, but it was such a cool story, and I guess it was a really interesting example of how times have changed and how much has changed and how important the guys are here on site and things like Mine Rescue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, I think that story might have morphed a little bit. I think it was actually Ravensworth that plane landed on, from my memory. But being said, it's just next door, absolutely. And they probably used our resources with that anyway, but but certainly, yeah, that part of our business is extremely important. Certainly not as important to me as what it used to be. I think our standards and our methods of mining and our procedures that we have in place, our really strong emphasis on safety in New South Wales in particular, has, you know, I strongly believe that we've got the safest mining industry in the world. Our reliance on our emergency services probably aren't what it was back in the 80s and 90s, which is a great thing. But we certainly still need them when, you know, things still do happen from time to time. So it's really important that we still have those facilities and things in place when we do need them, for sure.
Exactly. Showing me up on my own podcast. Couldn't have just pretended
with
HBO. Still a good story. Still a good story. Well, Dave, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been a pleasure.
No problem at all. Thank you, Dave.
Well, thank you for joining us for this episode of Digging Deeper with At The Coalface. You can download more episodes of the podcast on all your favourite podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, also on YouTube, Amazon Music, all the usual places. Make sure you leave us a rating and a review. We'd love to hear what you thought. And if you do have a story idea or something you'd like us to talk about on the podcast, please send me an email, jess@thecoalface.net.au. I'd love to hear from you, and we'll be back next time for another episode of Digging Deeper with At The Coalface.